Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. On today's show, investigative journalist Craig Unger joins us to talk about his new book, House of Trump, House of Putin, The Untold Story of Donald Trump and the Russian Mafia. Craig Unger writes, Donald Trump has denied having anything to do with Russia, having tweeted just 10 days before his inauguration, quote, Russia has never tried to use leverage over me. And this is in caps. I have nothing to do with Russia. No deals, no loans, no nothing, exclamation point, end quote. Craig Unger goes on to write, as this book will show, over the last four decades, Donald Trump and his associates have had significant ties to at least 59 people who facilitated business between Trump and the Russians, including relationships with dozens who have alleged ties to the Russian mafia. It will show that Trump has allowed Trump-branded real estate to be used as a vehicle that likely served to launder enormous amounts of money, perhaps billions of dollars, for the Russian mafia for more than three decades. Craig Unger is a contributing editor at Vanity Fair and the author of several books, including House of Bush, House of Saud. His new book is House of Trump, House of Putin. Hi, Craig. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Before we dive in and talk about your book, I want to talk about some breaking news about Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign chairman. And he just agreed to cooperate with special counsel Robert Mueller. And the New York Times reports, as part of the deal, he pleaded guilty to reduced charges. Manafort entered guilty pleas on two charges. It's not immediately clear what information he might be providing to prosecutors or how the plea agreement might affect Mueller's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. Craig, what do you make of this news?
Well, if Manafort really cooperates, and he can turn over enormous amounts of information. I think if you look at Manafort's career, you can see what he did in Ukraine very much as a precursor to what happened in 2016 in our election. In starting around 2004 and 2006, Manafort began working for Viktor Yanukovych, who became president of Ukraine and was essentially a Putin puppet. And if Manafort's deputies, Rick Gates, talked about the role Manafort was doing in Ukraine, and he said, and I'm quoting, this is in my book, that Paul has a whole separate government structure. In every ministry, he has a guy, unquote. So what you see there is that Manafort was conducting what amounted to covert operations on behalf of Putin to install a pro-Putin government in Ukraine more than 12 years ago. And I believe he did very similar things in the 2016 election in helping to install President Trump again as a pro-Putin president.
So at this point, we don't know what he will provide to prosecutors or how this plea agreement will affect the investigation. But what you're saying is this could be explosive?
Absolutely. I was just scanning the document. It just came out a couple of hours before I went on the air, and it's a long, long document and very, very dense. But it seems to be rich with material. One thing I noticed was it contains a detail that I think a lot of listeners may not understand the importance of, and that is that in some cases, Manafort was using a company called Lucicle to launder money. And that this is when you look at this, dive down into who's behind this shell company. One of the people is tied very closely to a man named Semyon Mogilevich, who is the wizard, the brains behind the Russian mafia. He is the financial wizard who has been laundering money through Trump properties for many, many years.
And Craig, before we move on specifically and talk about Trump and Russia, I mean, it's a lot of this is very connected. But what else do we need to know about Paul Manafort? Because we are getting headlines, but to really understand what's happening, in many cases, you definitely have to read a lengthy article.
Absolutely. I mean, Trump has said again and again, well, Manafort only worked for me for a few weeks. You know, that is not the whole truth by a long stretch. And in fact, they first started working together around 1980, 38 years ago. And Manafort, with his sometime partner, Roger Stone, ran a very famous lobbying shop out of Washington, D.C. And they became known as the Torturers Lobby or the Dictators Lobby. Mm-hmm. And they would represent Ferdinand Marcos of the Philippines or Jonas Savimbi or various really brutal dictators. And they made it almost into a sport. They reveled in the sleaze. And finally, they started doing it with Vladimir Putin as their favored dictator.
Okay, so what relationship did they have with Putin?
Well, very close. I mean, if you look at where the money's coming from in Manafort's case, indirectly at least, it's all coming from Putin or pro-Putin oligarchs like Dmitry Firtash. And Dmitry Firtash is in the energy trade. He partners with Semyon Mogilevich, who is the mobster I talked about. And they have been skimming huge amounts of money out of Russia's natural resources. So they created what were known as opaque intermediaries. These were companies that really didn't do anything. They were unnecessary. But they skimmed nearly $1 billion a year off the Ukraine energy trade. And that's why Putin wanted that in place so he could have a pro-Putin government in Ukraine. The Russian mafia wanted it in place because they were making lots of money off of it. And to make sure they had that support, they needed a powerful American political consultant. And in this case, it was Paul Manafort.
Craig, before we dive in and talk about your book, which is very, very detailed, there are a lot of names in here. I want to ask you some general questions. As you know, after the campaign, Russia dominated headlines. Democrats consistently talked about Russia. And a lot of people were angry about that, saying, you know, you're spending so much time talking about Russia. Why don't you spend more time talking about inequality? Craig, why do you think it is so incredibly important to talk about Russia? And do you think that all of this attention that Russia and Trump, the connections between the two, are getting is warranted?
Well, I really do think they are absolutely warranted. And yes, inequality is a huge issue and has to be addressed. But this was, you know, I hate the word meddling. People ask if Russia meddled in our institutions, in our election. Meddling is what your in-laws do in your marriage. This was an assault on America's sovereignty. It was a war of sorts. And I call it Virtual World War III. And by that, I mean it's a war without bombs or bullets or boots on the ground. And instead, Russia used other means. They used cyber warfare. They used hacking. They used disinformation. They used financial manipulation. They poured money into the Republican Party, not just to Trump, but to many, many people, sometimes through legal means. Part of the scandal is what's legal. We have, thanks to Citizens United, a very porous system through which millions and millions of dollars can be put into to the Republican party, well, to any party, but it seems to always be going to the Republicans. And they manipulated our elections. I think there's no doubt about it. So I think this is very much akin to an act of war. I don't know the legalities of it, what constitutes treason exactly, can be debated by lawyers and courts. But this was an assault by Russia on our electoral process. Make no mistake about it. And I believe they put a Russian asset in the White House.
And this is based on the research that you have done. And your notes go from page 285 to 338. So this was a heavily researched book.
Absolutely. I think I have over 1,000 footnotes, and I think and hope it's about as transparent as any book can be. And in many cases, I have the URL so that readers can check up on my research if they want to and go to the original documents.
All right. There's so much to talk about, but you just mentioned other politicians, and this section of the book really did strike me. You write, "This book will show that Trump, far from being the only potential asset targeted by the Russians, was one of dozens of politicians, most Republicans but some Democrats, and businessmen who became indebted to Russia, and that millions of dollars have been flowing flowing from individuals and companies from or with ties to Russia and GOP politicians, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, for more than 20 years?
Absolutely. In fact, if you remember the Jack Abramoff, Tom DeLay scandal in the late 90s, why were they going to Moscow? They were getting money from them, and they, it was poured in through super PACs and so forth. You can see that Leonard Blavatnik is an oligarch who has been naturalized American citizenship, so lots of money went from him to various super PACs and then to the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee that Mitch McConnell runs. Some of that money went to Lindsey Graham, and we've seen Lindsey Graham flip immediately after the death of his friend Senator John McCain and become very, very pro-Russian. He also was getting contributions from the Russians.
You also write, this book will show that the most powerful figures in America's national security, including two FBI directors, William Sessions and Louis Freeh, and special counsel to the CIA, Mitchell Rogovin, ended up working with Russians.
Right. I mean, one of the most startling things to me was I kept following Semyon Mogilevich. And I know that's a name that's difficult for a lot of Americans to pronounce, and it sounds rather foreign and all that. But I almost go back to 9/11 at a time when no one knew of Osama bin Laden's name, and it became familiar. And I would suggest Mogilevich is another name that may end up in that category. He's an extraordinarily powerful Russian mobster who is very closely tied to Vladimir Putin. And this is a point I really try to make again and again. I think it's hard for Americans to understand. But when I talk about the Russian mafia, they are very much part of the Russian government. This is not speculation on my part. I interviewed General Oleg Kalugin, who was head of the KGB counterintelligence. And when I asked him about the Russian mafia, he said, oh, that's just another part of the government. They reported to us, the KGB. And I talked to CIA officials about that. They verified that. I also was able to obtain documents from Ukrainian intelligence that showed a transcript regarding meetings between Vladimir Putin and Mogilevich. So Mogilevich and the Russian mafia is very, very closely tied, and they've been used as a weapon in this case to fight the United States. And when you see so many Russian mobsters in Trump Tower, I mean, that's something I'd like to unpack a bit, because I found, as I say, dozens of them that Trump had dealt with over the years. He's done business with them over the years. He has laundered money for them over the years. They have lived in Trump Tower. And when you think about that, what it means is they are Russian agents living in, working out of the home of the President of the United States, and in many cases partnering with him and doing business with him and funneling money towards him.
We'll talk about that more in a minute, but I'm glad you specifically focused on the Russian mafia, because the other criticism that people have is that the media are so casually saying, and the Democrats, the Russians, the Russian mafia, Russia, right? So can you talk more about this? I mean, what do you think about this language? And there needs to be context around this. Talk more about the relationship between the Russian government and the Russian mafia.
Right. Well, you know, I think this has been misunderstood for a lot of reasons. And I've lived in New York for a long time, and I was here in the 80s and 90s. And you would see stories in the tabloids about crimes regarding the Russian mafia, and in the New York Times as well. But I think no one thought of them in a geopolitical context at the time. And I went back over their crimes. And what I found is that as early as 1984, these are, when I say Russians, I name names, and I name 59 names who were intermediaries between Trump and the Russians. And one of the first was a man named David Bogdan, who was a lieutenant in Semyon Mogilevich's crime group. And he met with Donald Trump in 1984. Trump Tower had just opened at the time, and it was celebrated as the wildest, one of the glitziest buildings in America. And Bogdan went to Trump Tower, met with Donald Trump, and he put down $6 million in cash. That's the equivalent of about $15 million today. And he bought five condominiums. And according to the State Attorney General's Office of New York, that represented money laundering. And to my knowledge, it's the first time that Trump property was used to launder money for the Russian mafia. But it opened the floodgates. And we see it happening again and again over the next 30 years. And I name the various people. Many of them actually lived in Trump Tower. They laundered huge amounts of money. And we found there was a BuzzFeed investigation that found roughly 1,300 Trump condos that were sold under conditions that appear to be money laundering.
So tell us more about Bogdan. As you write in your book, in 1984, three alleged Russian gangsters, David Bogdan, Michael Markowitz, and Lev Persitz. Tell us more about these three, specifically David Bogdan, since he's such a central character in the book.
Right. Well, Bogdan was he actually looked far more white collar than some of the mobsters. And I think when you see what's happening with the Russian mafia at this stage, it's going through a transition. And initially, the Russian mafia was really sort of black marketeering, extortion, prostitution and human trafficking, really sort of thuggish activities that you expect of the mafia. But with Bogdan and his brother, Jacob Bogdan, who has also worked with Mogilevich, you start to see it rise to a white-collar level. And they started out partnering with the Italian mafia. And if you go way back in Trump's career, his lawyer, who he loved so much, was Roy Cohn, who was sort of the dark, satanic prince of the McCarthy era. He was a ruthless demagogue of sorts, and he was very much a bully. And actually, in recent months, you may have heard Donald Trump bellow from the West Wing of the White House, "Where is my Roy Cohn?" He wants a tough lawyer who's going to attack. And Roy Cohn was exactly that kind of lawyer. And Roy Cohn represented two branches of the Italian mafia that had just begun to partner with the newly arrived Russian mafia. And slowly they began to rise in the hierarchy from doing these sort of thuggish activities like extortion and so forth to more white-collar crimes. They had a pump-and-dump stock scheme with a phony company known as YBM Magnex that supposedly made industrial Magnex, and they pumped the stock up and cashed out and left all the other stockholders holding the bag. So they did a lot of operations like that. And gradually what we start to see is enormous amounts of money laundering. This was at a time at which the Soviet Union was crumbling. And while it was falling apart, and as it falls apart, suddenly there's been enormous amounts of flight capital. There's been more than $1 trillion in flight capital since Vladimir Putin was first elected president of Russia. That money needs to be laundered. And if you want to launder that kind of money, huge, huge amounts, by far the best way to do it is through real estate. And it helps to have a real estate mogul who has thousands of luxury condos, and he's willing to turn a blind eye and not ask too many questions. And that describes Donald Trump. And I think this is a very powerful geopolitical reason, geopolitical force behind the corruption of Donald Trump and of the American presidency. That is, you have Russia becoming a mafia state. It needs to launder all this money. And who's going to launder it? Donald Trump, the president of the United States. That creates a very, very problematic relationship. I think is worthy of impeachment.
Craig Unger has written about the relationship between Donald Trump and Russians, the Russian mafia specifically, for Vanity Fair and the New Republic. Craig is out with a new book, House of Trump, House of Putin, The Untold Story of Donald Trump and the Russian Mafia. We had Craig on a while back when he came out with his book, House of Bush, House of Saud. about the relationship between the Bush family and the Saudis. And if you have any questions for Craig, he's done extensive research. We're talking about the real story behind Donald Trump's connections to Russia. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Craig, you're talking about a lot of the money that came from Russia to New York. And in your book, you write, since coming to power first as prime minister in 1999 and then as president in 2000, Vladimir Putin's greatest triumph is his extraordinary command over a mafia state, a political system that is effectively a government of, by, and for organized crime. Can you just give us a little bit of history about how this relationship works between industry and how, people inside of around Putin's circle got so incredibly wealthy?
Right. Well, when I started looking into Putin, I guess one of the most obvious questions to me that I was trying to answer was, if you look back to the early 90s, Vladimir Putin had been in the KGB for 17 years. He had a really lackluster career. And after the fall of the Soviet Union, he became deputy city councilor in St. Petersburg. And I wondered, how do you go from that to becoming one of the most powerful men in the world? And the answer was that Russia was falling apart at the time, and the city councilor for whom he worked became mayor of St. Petersburg. So Putin became his assistant and suddenly found himself in a very, very powerful position where he could license and regulate new companies that were taking over, that were taking control of Russia's natural resources. And that put Putin in a position where he could determine he had real authority in determining whom could become rich. And when you look at his youth, Putin, his favorite sport was judo. And I went back to his judo club when he was just 15 years old, and I found that his judo coach was a very, very powerful figure in the Russian mafia. And some of his judo sparring partners, most notably the Rodenberg brothers, Arkady and Boris Rodenberg, and others in his judo club have since become hugely wealthy oligarchs. If you had been a sparring partner of Vladimir Putin's in judo when you were a teenager, the average wealth of those that I could locate was $6 billion.
Wow.
So that gives you a sense of how close this circle is and how close it goes back, how it goes back to very much to his youth. And with that, you start to see the rise of a mafia state. Putin's oligarchs are very much under his control. He can validate whether or not they become wealthy or not. And people who don't serve his interests have found out the hard way. If you look at various oligarchs who've tried to battle Vladimir Putin, Boris Berezovsky ended up dead under very mysterious circumstances. Mikhail Khodorkovsky ended up in jail. So you cross Vladimir Putin at your own peril, and he keeps these oligarchs under very tight rein.
And after a break, I'll ask you, Craig, where that money actually comes from. Craig Unger is a contributing editor at Vanity Fair. He has written extensively about the relationship between Donald Trump and the Russian mafia for Vanity Fair and the New Republic. And he's out with a new book, House of Trump, House of Putin, The Untold Story of Donald Trump and the Russian Mafia. Craig shows how over the last four decades, Donald Trump and his associates have had significant ties to at least 59 people who facilitated business between Trump and the Russians. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on local public radio, KALW San Francisco. A very good morning to you. I'm David LaTulipe here in studio with Malihe Razazan, producer of Your Call, joining me in just a moment. And for a gift of $120, this book of Craig Unger's, House of Trump, House of Putin, can be yours as a thank you gift. The first comprehensive investigation into the decades-long relationship among Donald Trump, Putin, and the Russian mafia that ultimately helped Trump win the White House.
Fake news.
Not fake news, Mr. Trump. Not at all. Craig Unger is putting it on the line here. Hi, Malihe.
Thank you so much, everyone, for calling and for reaching out and supporting KLW and your call. You can pledge your support at klw.org, 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. David, we have tried to cover the story of Russiagate and the relationship between U.S. and Russia without ignoring other issues, environmental, economic, politics, bringing in really great investigative journalists from across the country and across the world. If you appreciate our coverage, the Media Roundtable today and every Friday, you can support your call by going to klw.org and give your pledge securely online or 1-800-525-9917.
And for a $120 gift, Craig Unger's book, House of Trump, House of Putin, a book that confirms the most incredible American paranoias about Russian malevolence, can be yours as a thank you gift. Give it to a friend. Read it yourself first. $120 gift to klw.org. We're going to go right back to this extraordinary conversation. Your support makes these kinds of conversations possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are speaking with Craig Unger, investigative journalist, who's out with a new book, House of Trump, House of Putin, The Untold Story of Donald Trump and the Russian Mafia. Craig is a longtime journalist. He has been writing about these connections for Vanity Fair and The New Republic. We're going to get to calls in a minute, but before the break, Craig, you were talking about how Putin, Vladimir Putin, made himself and his inner circle incredibly wealthy. We're talking about billions of dollars. Where did this money come from?
Russian people, and in some cases Ukrainian people, were completely ripped off. This is their patrimony. These are their natural resources. And under the Soviet Union, theoretically at least, they were owned by the state, and theoretically at least shared with all the Soviet people. But when the Soviet Union crumbled, there was no one left to run them. They were privatized, and very few people had money. There was a very complicated – there was sort of a gold rush in there. And I've talked with American businessmen who tried to get in there and – to get in there and some of these industries could be snapped at up for just pennies on the dollar at incredibly low prices. I believe the whole Russian automobile industry was sold for $4 million. That's the price of a 2 or 3 bedroom apartment in my neighborhood. So there was this spectacular gold rush, but many of the people involved were part of the mafia. It was very, very dangerous and very, very violent. And the winners ended up as we think of them as the oligarchs today. And the oligarchs are really the ones who ended up with what appear to be legitimate industries in which they have almost a monopoly control over natural resources like liquid natural gas, aluminum, and so forth. And in my book, I sort of zero in on two sectors there, the energy trade with the Ukraine and the aluminum industry. There were what were known as the aluminum wars, which were very violent. Many people were killed. And a lot of this money ends up flowing into the Trump sector.
So you write, a number of these men moved to Manhattan and they bought Trump condos. You write, thanks to lax regulations, Trump began to sell condos in Trump Tower as an ideal vehicle through which criminals could put their dirty money into luxury condos while keeping their ownership anonymous. According to the New York State Attorney General's office, when Trump closed the deal for 5 apartments with David Bogatin, whether he knew it or not, he had just helped launder money for the Russian mafia.
Right. Well, you know, one of the key issues here is Trump's culpability. And in order to deal with that legally, you have to show whether or not Trump is knowledgeable. And it's very hard to get into Trump's mind. I certainly can't do it, and I don't pretend to read his mind. But there is a legal concept known as willful ignorance or willful blindness, in which a person appears to be intentionally turning a blind eye and not asking the right questions. And in Trump's case, there was a BuzzFeed investigation showing that these kind of transactions happened at least 1,300 times with Trump condos. And I think a good prosecutor could probably make an argument that turning a blind eye 1,300 times may well constitute willful ignorance.
1,300 times. You also report that Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier, the brutal and corrupt former leader of Haiti, bought an apartment on the 54th floor of Trump Tower in August of 1983. Duvalier.
Right. Right. This kind of thing happened again and again, and it's gone on through the years. One can't always penetrate and find who the actual real owner is. I found as recently as last year, while Trump was president, a man named Boris Kogan was living in Trump Tower, and he was allegedly the chief arms dealer for President Assad of Syria. That seems to me that represents a huge security breach, that this guy is living in the home of the President of the United States.
Well, how many Trumps are out there? I mean, because there are a lot of luxury condos in Manhattan. Do we know if Russian mafia, for example, were buying condos in other buildings?
Well, it certainly wouldn't surprise me. I don't know the answer to that definitively. But, of course, in Trump's case, the big, big difference is that he's president of the United States.
Right. Craig Unger is author of the new book, House of Trump, House of Putin, The Untold Story of Donald Trump and the Russian Mafia. Let's hear from a few listeners. Let's go to Jonathan in San Francisco. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I had a question about money laundering. I can understand how the mob or the mafia might want to launder money in the United States. Money is very tightly tracked by the FBI or the Security Exchange Commission or the likes. But I don't understand why Russia, especially if, as you say, the mob is in charge of the state, why they would need to launder money.
Well, they want to get it out of Russia. They want to get it into the Western banking system. I mean, one thing you realize in doing this, if you're a billionaire in Russia, there are not many goods to spend it on. I mean, they want to have fun. They want to be part of the Western world. They want to buy Western properties. So they've been invading. This has been going on in London for years. London was known as Londongrad for a while. And this is if you want to, you know, Russians want to be to operate in the Western world. It's just not, no, I don't think it's much fun being a billionaire in Minsk or whatever.
And then can you talk more about just following the money? What happens once this money is parked in real estate? Like, and if, for example, well, do these guys still own their apartments and condos in Trump Tower today?
Right. I mean, I think there are too many. Many of them may well. I mean, I'm going to go back into the database and see who's still there. But as I say, it's really hard to penetrate the shell company. So you can't always get at the real owner. That's something that Mueller can do. He has subpoena power. I can't do that. I'm sorry. What was the other question?
The other question was, when you follow the money, I guess it's hard because you can't penetrate the shell companies. But do you know what is done with the money once it's parked in these condos? Because as you said, this is happening all over the world.
Right. Well, when the condos are sold, they're instantly, the money is clean and they can do whatever they want with it. But you do see it going all over the world. For example, I was stunned to see that Trump Towers in Panama is again Russian. There are huge amounts of Russian numbers of Russians there, and Panama is hardly conveniently located, or it's not an obvious resort spa for Russian oligarchs. So they can do whatever they want with it, and they want to sort of legitimize themselves. I mean, if you look back at the Italian mafia, you saw them start to legitimize themselves as well. over the years in Las Vegas and through some very legitimate companies. And I think the Russians are trying to do that as well. But they've got such enormous amounts of money. They've been spreading it in their influence, and we can see it here in the United States. They've been putting money into the K Street lobby. They're trying to use it to they've in effect bought the Republican Party. I don't think that's too strong a word to say. If you look at the staunch loyalty of all the Republican elected officials, look at how they are hewing closely to Trump's line. And you can see that money flowed into the PACs I mentioned earlier, the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, and Mitch McConnell has that money, so he's standing up for Trump. They're also using it to try to get Congress to lift sanctions. That's what they want more than anything.
Well, thank you for calling, Jonathan. Let's go next to Mark in San Leandro. Hi, Mark. Hi, do we have Mark? Let's go to Phil in New Mexico. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to tell Mr. Unger, I read his New Republic article a year and a half ago, and I'm so delighted that he's made it into a book because there was so much material in it. I have two questions. One is about a year and a half ago, the BBC interviewed a retired Russian journalist, a woman, and I'm sorry, I don't remember her name, and she had retired for health reasons, namely she didn't want to end up like Anna Politkova or some of the other journalists, but she said that she was convinced that as the Soviet Union was falling apart in 91, that the Communist Party and particularly the KGB activated a plan where they diverted hundreds of millions of dollars from their slush funds, let's call it, into what I guess today we would call Russian organized crime, but that it was always a fiction that there was organized crime as an independent entity, that these were basically cutout groups. And related to that, I'd like to ask about, you know, one of the things that was remarkable about Michael Cohen is reading about just the extensive criminal network that he married into, I guess is the best way of saying, among the, you know, the Russian emigres in Brighton Beach, including his father-in-law and that Russian, the taxi king of New York, Gene, I think it's Friedman, who pled guilty. And I was wondering if Mr. Unger would speculate or could speculate about what Mueller may be doing with that part of the investigation, vis-a-vis trying to figure out, put together the big picture of what Putin and the KGB thought they were going to accomplish with Trump.
Okay, well, those are two very good questions. And to the first one, yes, I don't know the name of the Russian woman you were talking about, but yes, and in my book I talk about this in a great deal. As the Soviet Union was crumbling, the KGB came up with sort of a new strategy whereby it would it created companies that were essentially KGB fronts. So there are firms that appear to trade commodities. One of them was based in Belgium called Sibeco. And if you look at the people in those companies back in the early 90s, I found at least four of them ended up partnering with Donald Trump 25 years later. And they all had ties to Russian intelligence. And I think that's not just a coincidence. These were separate transactions, but they involved the Trump Tower in Toronto, and it involved a company called Bayrock, which actually was in Trump Tower here in New York and developed the Trump Soho also here in New York. So that kind of thing did go on, and it became I think there's a really important part of the story because these companies appear to be big, legitimate, multi-billion dollar companies in some cases, but they have tight ties to the Russian mafia and in turn to Russian intelligence. And as the woman said, yes, I believe when we talk about the Russian mafia, you have to also remember they are Russian agents. They are Russian agents. And when I say they're doing business with Donald Trump, that means Russian agents have been doing business with Donald Trump, living in his home where he works, the crown jewel of his empire, and he's president of the United States, and that's deeply disturbing. And the other question was really about Michael Cohen, and I think this is going to be another crucial coup for Robert Mueller. That is, as the caller said, and it's nice to see someone who's really well informed. Michael Cohen, the president's lawyer for many years, going way, way back to the 80s, his uncle and other members of his family owned the base of operations for the Russian mafia in Brooklyn. It was a restaurant dining hall called the El Carib. And that was Michael Cohen. So he had ties to that. He was friendly with Felix Sater because he dated a Ukrainian woman who he later married, and his wife had been friends with Sater. So they had ties to the Russian mafia going way, way back. And then they both end up working with Donald Trump. And I think this means that now that we know Michael Cohen has flipped and is going to cooperate with Robert Mueller, I think we can see a huge string of revelations there that go right up to the present and will take us from the 80s to today. And you will see back channels from Donald Trump through Michael Cohen, through Michael Cohen's Ukrainian ties to various mobsters and so forth, that represent a secret channel to the President of the United States.
Well, it's difficult to even have a visual of what you just explained, Craig. And the media are mostly focusing on Michael Cohen making the admission in court that Trump directed him to arrange payments to two women during the 2016 campaign to keep them from speaking publicly about the affairs they said they had with Trump. I mean, that's what's getting the most attention.
Right. You know, the media, we are being bombarded with information, with stories. There are 10 stories every day that would be front page stories if newspapers still were very much alive. And there's just not room for them all. And a lot gets lost in the shuffle, and it's hard to put them all together. And I think it's very much like people are getting one piece of the jigsaw puzzle here and one there, and they're 10 or 15 every hour. What I try to do in my book is put them all together in a big picture so you can see a narrative that starts more than 35 years ago and goes up to the present, and now it's all coming unraveled.
Today we're speaking with Craig Unger, investigative journalist, who's out with a new book called House of Trump, House of Putin, The Untold Story of Donald Trump and the Russian Mafia. Speaking of the media, Craig, because this is getting so much attention, I mean, you cannot turn on the cable shows without hearing about Russia. How do you think reporters and the media should talk about this issue without creating an anti-Russia phobia?
Well, I think we have to take it very, very seriously and do it in a measured way. To be honest, I don't mind it if it's an anti-Putin phobia. I think what he's done is this has been a direct assault on America's sovereignty. This is undermining a presidential election. Whether that constitutes an act of war under the law, I don't really know. But it's very, very serious. I think we have to seize back the language in a way. People ask if this meddling, has Russia meddled in our elections? I think it's much worse than that. Meddling is what your in-laws do in your marriage. This was an assault on our sovereignty. It was sabotaging a presidential election. And I think that's a very, very serious act. And if anything, it hasn't been addressed fully enough.
Okay, so can you elaborate on that? When you say it was an assault, what do you mean exactly?
Well, I mean, what we see, and I think my book shows that over a 30-year period, Trump becomes closer and closer to Russia, that as early as the 80s, he's being wooed by them. I interviewed General Oleg Kalugin, who was head of counterintelligence at the KGB. And he says in the Trump's 1987 trip to Russia, he was almost certainly caught in videotape compromat, and that he was compromised as early as then. To have someone in that position, elected president, who's been compromised by Russia, that's not viable in the United States. We can't have someone so compromised. And in many ways, I think everything is the collusion is staring us, is hiding in plain sight. You have dozens of Russians, and I talk about them in my book, who are living in Trump Tower, who've bought and sold condos there, who've been laundering money there. They are agents of Russia, Russian agents who have compromised the president of the United States. In broad strokes, I think it's as simple as that. And of course, there are thousands and thousands of details. But let's look at the big picture for a moment. Russian agents living in, working with, partnering with the president of the United States. I think that's deeply disturbing.
And to your knowledge, do the people living in the towers have access to Trump in the White House?
Well, they in the White House, I can't definitely say in the White House. When they were there before the White House, Bayrock, for example, was situated on the 24th floor of Trump Tower. And Felix Sater said he'd run right, he'd just walk up the stairs to Trump, whose offices were, I believe, on the 26th floor, and he'd pop in and had plenty of access to him then. We later see, even after Trump was elected, after he became president, that Michael Cohen and Felix Sater were trying to arrange a so-called peace deal with the president of Ukraine that essentially, I believe, would have sold out the people of Ukraine to Russia for a deal that was never consummated. But we did see that channel had been activated, and Michael Cohen still had access to President Cohen, President Trump.
Craig Unger is author of House of Trump, House of Putin, The Untold Story of Donald Trump and the Russian Mafia. Craig, what do you think the Russians have on Donald Trump? I mean, all of the information about the towers, the money laundering, as you have written about this extensively, you mentioned Thomas Frank's BuzzFeed piece. That is out there. But do you think they have anything else on him?
Well, there's certainly been many allegations, most notably in the dossier of Christopher Steele, that there was actually videotape compromise of unusual sexual activities on the part of Trump. When I talked to General Kalugin, he made similar allegations, but it was about a different episode in 1987 when Trump first visited there. There was also, documents from Czech authorities, Czech secret police. That is, Trump's first wife was Ivana, was from the Czechoslovakia, and her family was under surveillance by the Czech secret police, who were reported directly to the KGB. And in one of their documents, they said that Trump was being pressured to run for president. This goes back to the 1980s. Mm. So something was going on very early on. We don't know all the answers there. But there have been many allegations like that. I've also talked to people who are part of the Russian mafia, and they have made similar allegations as well.
Craig, you write, without Russia, Trump would not be president.
Absolutely. For one thing, Trump was $4 billion in debt when he came out of Atlantic City. He had vastly overexpanded in Atlantic City. He had ended up with six bankruptcies and debts totaling $4 billion. A guy who's $4 billion in debt is not going to be elected president. And the Russians put him back on the mat. They saved him. They owned him. They were able to sell hundreds and hundreds of Trump condos. When he came out of Atlantic City, he was so deeply in debt that no Western banks would loan him money, except Deutsche Bank, which has been tied to money laundering. So when he couldn't get any loans, the Russians went to him, said, essentially made him an offer that he couldn't refuse. And they put up hundreds of millions of dollars, perhaps even billions, to develop new properties that they would brand as Trump properties. And one of these, of course, here in New York was the Trump Soho. So he put up no money for it. And he was allowed to collect royalties of 18% to 25% on every condo that was sold. And he was able to do that all over the world. They came up with a way to get him out of debt, to make him a billionaire again. And without that, he never would have been able to run for president.
Craig Unger is an investigative journalist. His new book is House of Trump, House of Putin: The Untold Story of Donald Trump and the Russian Mafia. Craig, thanks for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Calls Media Roundtable.